to The Silva Lining, brought to you by the Silva Feria Funeral Home, right here on 1480 WSAR. To join the conversation, call 508-673-1480.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Silva Lining. I'm your host, Amy Silva Rigtrup, funeral director at Silva Faria Funeral Homes with locations in Fall River and in Somerset. And if you'd like to call in today and chat with us, the number is 508-673-1480. And as it's our last show of this year, and Christmas is already around the corner, coming right next week, the topic of today's show is going to be ways that we can help families and those that are sitting vigil with family members that are not doing too well, ways that we can help cope with grief around this holiday season, which is very difficult for many people, as I know a lot of people can relate to. Whether you've lost someone recently or even years and years ago, it's a time of year where a lot of emotions come up when everybody's expected to be full of happiness and joy and smiles on their faces. A lot of memories and traditions sometimes trigger emotions of grief, and there's awkwardness that comes around when you feel like you shouldn't mention the person that you miss. And when you're surrounded by people that you don't feel like you can talk about these things with, it makes it even harder. So we want to talk about different ways that as family and friends of those that are bereaved, and as speaking to the bereaved themselves, ways that we can make this a little easier and a little more open and more comfortable for everyone involved. So to help talk with me about this today, I have someone that has worked with a wonderful guest I've had on the show twice already, Deanna Upchurch with Home and Hospice Care of Rhode Island. She has sent me a wonderful grief counselor that works with her. His name is Mark O'Neill, and he is also with Home and Hospice Care of Rhode Island. Not only is this a wonderful organization that I've been amazed with all year since I've been checking them out, but I also recently saw them on Channel 10, which they were in a small piece that was circulating on Facebook a couple days ago, and I had been thinking of doing this theme about the holidays, and boom, there's this piece about coping with holiday grief by Home and Hospice Care of Rhode Island, and I'm going to be posting that piece from Channel 10 on the blog post that I'll post in a day or two so that everyone can see it. So Mark, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I heard from Deanna that you've been with Home and Hospice Care for about 5 years.
Yeah, it's almost 6 years that I've been with Home and Hospice as a grief counselor. So we work with people individually, but we also have a number of support groups in trying to help people move through the process. So I facilitate a number of groups as well.
Yeah, the programs that you guys have is really amazing. I'm very impressed with everything that you guys do with your outreach and with children. And the piece that you did, the volunteer that was featured there, mm-hmm. I have a soft spot for men like him, and he just seemed like such a gem. And it seems like he definitely has helped a lot of people as well.
Yeah. Ed, yes, I think everyone has a soft spot for Ed if you meet with him. And we have some wonderful volunteers and others like Ed who have actually gone through the grief support groups and as part of their healing process have wanted to give back and help support others as they move through their journey. And so Ed is actually facilitating one of our groups.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it must kind of come full circle for the volunteers themselves, because there must be some comfort and some, like, almost empowerfulness that comes in helping others, too, that have gone through what they've gone through and kind of paying it forward in that kind of respect.
Yes, I think a lot of the volunteers that we have at Home and Hospice, and we have hundreds of volunteers, have been through this process as a family member. So there is a deep understanding of what this is, and I think that many people who have not had the hospice experience don't fully understand what we do. The level of support that's available to family, mm-hmm. it's not just the patient that we're helping, but that we have spiritual care, chaplains who are supporting families, social worker, our nurses who are excellent and really understand what this is. So often as a grief counselor, I hear people talk about how grateful they were for the experience and that they didn't fully understand what it was until they went through it. So
yeah.
I think once you do, it's not surprising that people want to help others who are going through a similar thing.
Especially knowing that all the support doesn't end immediately when the actual service ends that they're requiring. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it, with all hospice that I've dealt with as a funeral director, because I get to see a lot of the families come before me when they're planning the funeral, and most of them are in that immediate situation, and I get to hear all of that appreciation so raw and so fresh of how much that they are so grateful for all the support that they have. And then when they come back, usually, and talk to us a week or two later, they're always like, wow, I'm still being checked in on by so-and-so and by so-and-so. And even with my 17-year-old son, he was followed up with. Like, they're just so amazed with how much follow-up that there is and how much support goes beyond. So in the holiday season, I'm sure a lot of families really appreciate that there still is that support available for them.
Absolutely. And because I think, you know, obviously the holidays are hard for people. So January was always a busy month for us.
Yeah.
Because people are going through that intensity of emotion. And it may not be, as you said, the first year. Maybe it's the second year or further on. And they realize that they might need some support or some place to go to be able to talk about that experience. And so they come to us. You know, the hospice philosophy includes the idea that people are going to be able to access support up to 13 months after someone's passed away.
Wow.
That's the guideline.
Yeah.
It's not that at 13 months, you know, services
yeah.
stop.
Like the doors slammed.
Right, yes, yes, you're all set. So there is this idea that we're going to meet people's needs as they move forward, you know, as long as they have that need.
Mm-hmm.
And often in these support groups that we have, they form groups within a group, meaning that they will see each other outside of the group, will
mm-hmm.
begin to form their own network of support. You know, I think about it as finding companions for the journey.
Yes, absolutely. And you can't create bonds like that artificially. You know, that's where the beauty is.
Well, there's this shared experience, and I'm sure that, you know, if any of your listeners are going through the grief process,
mm-hmm.
know what that is. You know, we say someone becomes an expert about something they wish they knew nothing about.
Yeah.
But it is much like it must be for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the work that you do, that there is this understanding that happens as you go through it, that if you haven't experienced it, others just really don't know what it is. But if you do, then there's a shared experience that can be very powerful. And just like we were talking about with volunteers, people often who've gone through this process want to reach out to people in the future, because they will often say that they didn't understand what someone really needed
yeah.
who was grieving before it happened to them.
Yeah, and now they have this common thread.
And so now they know what they can do to support
mm-hmm.
someone else in the future. You know, in our support groups, so often we hear that people's experiences are painful because of the well-intended help that
yes.
people offer,
yes.
especially around times like the holidays, about the things you should do. And that, the well-intentioned can be hurtful to someone who's really trying to do their best to get through something really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, whether someone stays busy or tries to know that person is in heaven, the things that people might say, it doesn't necessarily change your day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to come home often to an empty house.
Yes.
Or you don't have that phone call at the end of the day that you always had.
Mm-hmm. And that routine.
Yeah. So.
And I think intentions and expectations are two very, very important words. That intentions, though they are very well intended, and people always understand that, it's hard to understand how it can kind of hurt. You know what I mean? And it's not to say from a place that anybody should feel bad. I mean, it's just a natural happening, you know? So,
that's right.
So I think it's important that things are talked about, and I'm glad to have a radio show where anybody can be listening in a comfortable setting and not know that we're coming from a place of judgment or negativity, but just mm-hmm. to realize the perspective that well-intended things can be taken a lot of different ways when there's something that someone is dealing with as heavy and multifaceted as grief, when holidays are put on top of that, that make it even more heavy and multifaceted. So we're going to get into this a lot more with some coping strategies and some other perspectives that we can help and add. And again, you're always welcome to call in and join us after the break on The Silver Lining.
I will remember you.
You're listening to The Silver Lining, brought to you by the Silver Feria Funeral Home.
Hi, and welcome back to The Silver Lining. I'm your host, Amy Silva-Rigtrup, Funeral Director at Silver Feria Funeral Homes, with locations in Fall River and in Somerset. And if you're just joining us, we are talking about ways to cope with grief during the holidays. And I'm joined today with a wonderful guest, Mark O'Neill. He's a grief counselor with Home and Hospice Care of Rhode Island, a very unbelievable organization with their support, not just in what they do with their hospice care in their own facilities, but in their outreach programs and their support programs. And they have a lot of, just looking at flyers here in front of me for support groups, but I know they do a lot of work with children as well, and I have some more announcements that I'm going to mention later in the show for some upcoming support that they have as well. But for this segment, I want to talk more about expectations, and there's a lot that word holds in grief, not just for grief in general, but also surrounding dynamics with grief during the holidays. So I wanted to ask you, Mark, when it comes to expectations, I know that that must come up a lot in support groups. And as a whole, what do you usually say to those bereaved, even in the immediate setting and in more, I don't know what the term I was just trying to say, but for someone that has been bereaved for a longer period of time, I know that expectations are a big topic. What would you usually say to someone that is struggling with their grief?
Right. The the expectation of where someone is going to be in their process, right? That people often hear something like it's been a year, or it's been whatever X number of time, and that you should be doing better. Or even sometimes just the assumption, and people will say something, "Oh, it's been a year, so you must be doing better." Expectations. Are difficult. And, you know, the holidays in particular, it's because it's not only the fact that you're missing this person who's died, but that everyone around you seems to be having, you know, a wonderful time. And that focus on family and celebration and togetherness, I think, really highlights that separation that the grieving person often feels, that they don't feel a part of what's happening. And so the holidays really intensify that experience for people. And so, you know, there's a lot of shoulds. You know, there's shoulds in our lives in general, but there's a lot of shoulds when it comes to grief in terms of what someone should or shouldn't do. So around the holidays, you might, you know, people might think you should celebrate as you always celebrated. You should do this for this person, or you should do that. And there's really no right or wrong way about doing this. It's trying to pay attention to that which feels right to you, which is important. And so it might be doing the same exact holiday that you always did, because that's where you get that sense of meaning and purpose from. But it might mean, you know, doing it at someone else's house, might be downsizing it. Some people might, you know, go out to dinner, or some people might go away. You know, it really depends on what is the most meaningful to that person. And sometimes within families, it's also not going to be the same. You know, one person might have a different desire or need than someone else, and so that gets tricky. But talking about it, I think, is really necessary. Talking about it with your family members, thinking about what you might want to do, what's meaningful, the most meaningful to everyone, and being able to try to move forward from that place. You know, people often have that fear of they don't want to ruin the holiday.
Yeah.
But I always try to remember the holiday is already changed.
Yes.
No matter if every single piece is exactly the same, there's a missing piece. And so things are going to be different. And it's trying to find out how they can still be meaningful.
And I think communication, too, kind of helps shatter that wall. Because sometimes, mm-hmm. like, the family on one end might be like, oh, well, we shouldn't bring up so-and-so that passed away because it might upset them.
That's
but
right.
then the bereaved might be like, oh, well, I really want everybody to talk about her because I would feel upset if they didn't. But I'm afraid to bring it up because I don't want to be that downer.
That's right.
So now that wall is put up. But if that wall were to be shattered, then all those assumptions would be easily clarified. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
then maybe some tradition or some activity might then, through that communication, come up that they could all do that would not only honor her, but would, you know, create a tradition that would memorialize her, that would include everybody,
mm-hmm.
that would take away that awkwardness. And become something new that the family does every year to honor her and to shatter that wall.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah, you were telling me about some of them earlier.
Yeah, I put out on Facebook. I love Facebook. I mean, there's a lot people have to say negatively about it, but I'm a funeral director who has no life really besides working and taking care of my awesome, awesome family. Well, my husband really is who I have to thank for being able to take care of my family. But I wouldn't be in touch with probably anybody in my life if it weren't for Facebook, and I feel very close to a lot of people. But I put out a simple message the other day saying that this would be my topic. I think it was just yesterday. And I just asked if people could share with me some of the ways that they memorialize their loved ones around the holidays, and I got such amazing feedback. I'm not going to use names, but there's one friend who's my age and lost her father, and his nickname was Moose, which I think is really a great nickname. and to me, it says a lot about a personality, like nicknames. And what she's doing is she found these special cookie cutters, which I assume probably look like a moose, and she's making moose cookies, and she's going to present all of her, you know, immediate family and his friends with these platter of moose cookies to honor and remember him. And I think that's mm-hmm. beautiful.
That's a great idea.
And I had a lot of friends mention a lot of things surrounding food and specific dishes and recipes that they're perfecting from people that have passed away and their families. And that's not only something that I think there's a triumph and a special connection in, like, learning a recipe from someone that's passed away, but that's also something that you can pass on and include in future generations and still keep the memory and the personality and something created by an ancestor that's passed away, like alive in future generations.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful way to honor and remember somebody and to talk. Like, as you're doing it, you can share a story. Like, the first time grandma taught me how to make these cookies, I put salt in it instead of sugar, and my, oh my, you know, like, that was a funny day. There's a woman that shared in here. She unfortunately lost her very young child to pediatric cancer. This is, I believe, her second Christmas without him. And she put in here that last Christmas, she had everyone bring something for his stocking. And she has other children as well. So after Christmas, kept all those items in a keepsake box for all of her and her other children to reflect on every year. So then this year, she bought, like, a live tree that everyone's going to bring an ornament for that represents, like, things about his personality. They're going to save those items also in a keepsake box and then plant that tree. And I told her that I just think this is beautiful because it's an activity that not only ties to his personality and to talking about him, but it's an activity that includes her children. And it's going to also create something that's a tradition that's going to be there for the future, for reflection and for remembrance for her and her children, you know, in the future as well. So I think that's an amazing holiday tradition that she's created to include him and her whole family. And that really floored me.
Yeah, you know, it also, I think importantly, keeps her, you know, her child in the present.
Yes.
Too. So
like
it's
as a part of Christmas.
That's right. And that's really important because I think we think often about the idea of leaving someone behind. But, you know, doing these kind of traditions help keep that person in the present, keeps that sense of connection, that meaningful connection. And I think that can, you know, make a difference in how people move forward.
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to get back into some other ideas and some other coping strategies and advice. So please join us after the break on the Silva Lining.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. Yes, in high seas or in low seas.
Welcome to the Silva Lining, brought to you by the Silva Feria Funeral Home, right here on 1480 WSAR. To join the conversation, call 508-673-1480.
In high tide or in low tide.
Hi, and welcome back to the Silva Lining. I'm your host, Amy Silva Rigtrup, Funeral Director at Silva Feria Funeral Homes, with locations in Fall River and also in Somerset. And the call-in number, if you'd like to chat with us, is 508-673-1480. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about different ways that people handle grief during the holidays, and we were just reading off some different examples that families honor and memorialize their loved ones during the holidays. So we'd love to hear from you if you have any examples that you'd like to share with us from your family and your traditions. So the call-in number, I think I just said it, but I'll say it again. It's 508-673-1480. And one more I wanted to mention was this one family told me on Facebook that all the adults in the family, I guess since the children don't have credit cards yet, they give jointly to a charity that they all select beforehand, before Christmas, in place of buying for each other, which I think is really beautiful. The first year they did this, it was to the American Cancer Society in honor of a late family member. And then the next year was to the Alzheimer's Association in memory of another late family member that died of Alzheimer's. And then this past year was to two NICU programs because of some new family members that utilized the NICU, which I can really relate to. We're very grateful for the NICU for the birth of our twins that were at the NICU at Women and Infants for 30 days, and also to Ronald McDonald House that thankfully did a lot for us. And those are our two standing charities that we always support. So I think that's a beautiful way to also honor, memorialize, and to pay forward at the same time. While we were on break, Mark, you said something beautiful, kind of expanding on the thought of recipes and passing on recipes and what that also does symbolically with grief.
Right. Well, we had talked about the mother and her idea of how to create that tradition for her mm-hmm. child and how that connects them to the present. And I think the same thing is true in thinking about recipes or other things when you're doing something that person also did. You know, so if you're making that recipe for the first time, you know, you're literally, you know, your hands are where their hands were.
Yeah.
You know, you're tasting what they might have tasted. You're understanding something about that process, which helps you understand something about that person's experience. And it creates that sense of, again, connection in the present moment. And there's something about smell and taste. You know, smell is the one sensory experience that goes directly into memory, doesn't go anywhere else. That's why smells are so powerful to us in remembering things. So there are these ways of walking in that person's shoes. You know, my mom passed away last year in November suddenly, and you're giving your examples of people doing things to remember people, and it just my family this past weekend there was always this holiday parade that my mom always loved and always sort of made us go to, and my mom was this sort of colorful person in this way. She would have bubbles, she would blow bubbles and throw glitter, you know, like fairy dust. So my siblings, who are all in New Jersey where my mom was living, created this float, and they put it in the parade this year.
Wow.
And it was a, you know, an elf's hat, because my mom was, you know, kind of elfin in that way, and a little bit of a trickster. So, and instead of glitter, they had a bubble machine, so that bubbles were, you know, blowing down the street. And it creates memories, you know, it creates memories in the moment, and they, you know, sustain you.
It's beautiful.
So, you know, hopefully that'll be a tradition going forward. But again, it's this idea of, you know, sort of walking with them. So even though my mom wasn't there in this case, she was, you know, everyone was thinking about her, holding her, and they were doing something which actually brought her spirit into the present. And food can do that too. I did a memorial once for a woman whose son had passed suddenly. And we all were at his grave site, and we were in a circle, and we, instead of, you know, communion, so please forgive me if this sounds sacrilegious, but we all had a little piece of cannoli from his favorite bakery, you know, and it was this thing that he loved, you know, that sense of taste and smell. And so we all had a piece of that, a sense of connection to him. And we talked earlier about that feeling of if you mention your loved one, whether that'll bring sadness to people. Mm-hmm. And that was the happiest I'd ever seen his mom. Was that everyone was talking about him.
Yeah.
Everyone was connecting to his memory. Because when we think about not mentioning the loved one to the person we don't want to hurt, they're always thinking of that person. So it's not that if we mention that, it suddenly, pops to their mind.
Yeah. Like, oh, I haven't thought about that person all
day. Right.
Like, I'm always thinking about her.
Right. So it normalizes things. You know, it normalizes things for people. And sometimes, you know, that's true for children. There's often a lot of anxiety and how you present this to children and how they'll react. But, you know, they're thinking of that person too.
Yeah.
You know, they're already thinking of who's not there. And often, you know, children have they have the ability to imagine and to think about things. They don't hold on to things in the same way that adults do. So that there's an ability to interact with something, feel something, and then kind of move on to the next thing.
Totally.
So, you know, thinking about children, and I know you were talking about how involving children in funeral services, and I know around the holidays a lot of people have uncertainty about that. But, you know, I think if you talk to the child, as you were saying earlier, if you give them options, you know, you
that you're
find,
comfortable
right,
with,
and you find ways to include them, that, you know, they'll often be able to sort of point you in the right direction.
Yeah, I have a friend who recently lost his fiance and has three young daughters, and another friend presented them with an ornament with her picture on it, and they put it on the tree, and the ornament says, because someone we love is in heaven, there's a little bit of heaven in our home. Mm. And on the other side has her picture, and I think that's just absolutely beautiful.
Mm.
And the youngest of his children is 3 years old, and she's just one of those kids that I swear she's just an old soul. I mean, you can't put anything past her. She picks up on everything. I mean, at the wake, she was there, she was involved, and she kind of led her own journey at the wake. Like, she saw her mother, she did her thing, and then she kind of came up to me and asked me for a job. She's like, can I do something to help?
Wow.
So I gave her a little job. I was like, here, do you want to help pass out these prayer cards to all these people in line? They'd all love a picture of your mom. And on the back of the prayer cards were like a variety of different like scenic pictures. Some had, you know, flowers, some had mountains. And she put so much thought into standing at every person in line and deciding which prayer card was right for each person. And it was like the cutest thing in the world. But she was so happy, like having something to do. And it was almost like the soup kitchen, like the soup Nazi. Like, she put so much thought into it. She'd, like, look everyone up and down and be like, you are going to get the mountains. Okay, you're going to get the beach. Like, she put so much thought into it. But she led her own way. She knew what she wanted to be involved in and what she didn't. And we had a room where she could kind of play off and be on her own. And there were people that were kind of with her so that her dad and her sisters could be part of the service, part of the wake, so that she could kind of freely do her own thing. So I'm sure around these holidays, she's going to make it very known, you know, what she wants to talk about and what she doesn't want to talk about, because she's that kind of kid. You know, you kind of follow her lead. But as far as expectations and intentions I think that's where communication is really the only way to make those things less awkward and less of an elephant in the room between families. And I think everyone that's bereaved, whether you've lost someone recently or you've lost someone a long, long time ago, I think you already kind of know the people that you're more comfortable being around or talking about certain things with. And I don't think there's anything wrong with making more of your plans revolve around the people that more make you comfortable or uplift you or don't kind of stress you out or make you feel awkward. Like, I think there's nothing wrong as a bereaved person and kind of driving your own ship around the holidays and maybe avoiding situations that you know are going to cause more stress and anxiety. I don't know if that goes against anything that, that you might feel. But
that's really good advice.
But I think there's something in this society that, you know, the bereaved kind of have a right to say, I can kind of make my own decisions, and I don't need to really feel so forced.
That's right.
To do everything that is presented to me in the holidays, because it is kind of overwhelming. You're getting invitations, and especially when it's more of a recent passing, it seems like some support networks like overly reach out, you know, and that's great. Like, it's always good to reach out, but I think as a bereaved person, you have the right to kind of judge and decide what you're comfortable doing. And it's okay not to say yes to everything and go to 7 parties in a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I think
When I do a holiday talk, one of the things I always mention first is to try to give people permission to say no.
Yeah, because that's hard.
Just what you said. Well, and I try to take the judgment out of it and to think about it purely in terms of energy. So that, because you're very aware of your energy when you're grieving, right? So you might experience it as intolerance, that you might feel more intolerant when you have less energy.
Mm-hmm.
But energy, just the scenario that you described, if you're around people or situations which take energy from you, you know it.
Yeah.
And you don't have a lot of energy to give when you're grieving because your grief is taking all your energy. So if you're making decisions based on that, what gives you energy, you know, going towards that, and avoiding or lessening the time you're around something that takes energy from you, I think is really important, because we have limited reserves.
Yes.
You know, and they're taxed when we're going through that process. You know, I always say also, like, you never carpool anywhere, you know, if you're grieving, you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sit near the aisles. You know, always give
yourself
an
out,
because you don't know how you're going to react in a certain in a certain experience, and to give yourself permission to take care of yourself. And if you're in a situation where you don't know whether you should go to a holiday, a party or a gathering, you know, talk to the host, talk to the person, and just let them know that, you know, you're having a hard time and that you might need to leave, so that you can feel like you can walk out and it's okay. You know, and so communication, as you said, you know, is important in many ways. Even if you don't know how you're going to be that day, you know, talking about it can help. And again, sort of give you permission to do what you need to do for yourself.
I think it's also good, too, to give yourself permission because you know your inner circle. And I think most people that are bereaved, like, know their support system. And even around the holidays, I think it's even more important to know who you can call on and to give yourself permission to ask for help and know who your friends are that you can call on for that more, less intense help. To know if you have someone that you can call on, not for the big parties, like, maybe know who you can have in mind that would be okay with just coming over and watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, not, there might be people that are free that are comfortable to come over and keep you company in those times when, like you said, might be the hardest. When all the parties are over, all the intensity is done, and you're coming home to an empty house. Like, maybe look over your circle of friends and maybe reach out to them and say, hey, you know, what's your availability like? Like, I might have a hard time one of these nights. Would you maybe mind, if I'm having a hard time, could I call on you to maybe just come and watch a movie with me? You know, or some Seinfeld reruns, you know, like, I might need that, just so you know. I mean, there might be a lot of people out there that are willing to do that. And I think it's hard for the bereaved to ask for that kind of help, and to reach out to the support networks. It might not be bad to let your friends know that are bereaved that you're willing to offer that kind of help. Like, hey, I'm that friend. Like, if you need that nothing kind of help, like if you need that person to come over and really just, you know, drink a glass of water and watch some reruns at 1 in the morning, I'm there. I got no kids and a dog. Like, call me. So we have one more segment coming back, and we would love you to join us. So we'll be right back after the break.
Oh, Amy, just you've got a phone call.
Oh, but, I do have
a
phone call.
But we have to take a break.
Ooh,
so
we
let's
do have to take a break.
That person to stay on the line.
I would love for you to stay on the line, caller, if you don't mind holding, and we will take you right when we come back from the break.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside.
You're listening to The Silva Lining, brought to you by the Silva Feria Funeral Home.
Hi, and welcome back to The Silva Lining. We have a wonderful patient caller that's been waiting, so I want to bring you on the air. Caller, thank you so much for waiting. Thank you for calling The Silva Lining.
Amy, I'm listening, and I live and I listen in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
I'm originally from Fall River and really interested in my hometown. So I listen to WSAR often on my lunch hour, which is what it is out here. And I mostly listen to the news, to the Voice of Business, Sense and Nonsense. And this is the first time I've heard your show, but I had to call and tell you how much I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. That means the world to me.
I've had a number of close relatives pass away in the past 2 or 3 years, and I have a 12-year-old son. Mm. And navigating that grief and bereavement with a child is difficult, but I think the more we can talk about it on shows like yours, the easier it's going to be for all of us to kind of figure this out and get through it. So there's so I don't want to know any more about celebrities. When I listen to the radio, I'm so sick of hearing about celebrities or hearing about the presidential race that it's such a treat to turn the radio on and hear a serious conversation that means something, that's helpful, and is as unique as your show. So I've become a fan of your show. This is the first time I've listened, but I'll listen again.
Thank you. You're making me cry. And I love San Francisco. I visit every time I come out. My family's in San Jose and in Tracy, and they're all very Portuguese, and they all came out there from here because they didn't like the snow.
And you've probably been to Pescadero, another Portuguese community.
Yes, and Hillmar, and where else have I been? Manteca? Manteca?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've been all over. But thank you so much for calling. That means so
much
to me.
You're welcome. And keep up the good work. And your guest as well. He's been a real delight to listen to in terms of his deep experience and understanding on this very difficult but important topic.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling. You have a wonderful holiday.
You too. Take care. Bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Oh, that was so nice to hear. Wow, a caller on the West Coast with a time change and everything. It's always great to hear that I'm liked more than politics, because I don't like politics at all. But anyway, so with our last segment already upon us, I do want to mention for a couple of minutes, since we work, 4 minutes left. We work, both of us, also with families right now, that I'm sure there are many. It's very hard with the families that are probably sitting right now with family members that are not doing very well. Mm. And being on the side of a bed of somebody that could pass away at any moment around the holidays is always very hard. But around the holidays, there's just that added level of stress. And I know as hospice workers and as funeral directors, we see a lot of those elements. So I didn't know if you wanted to speak a little bit about what you help with families that are in this situation, and then I'll talk a little bit as a funeral director about the advice that we give to help alleviate some of that stress.
Right. Well, I know there's not a lot of time
yeah.
to talk about it, but I would say in general, you know, that to try to be present as much as you can, you know, that if there are things that are not said, you know, to say them.
Yes.
You know, in hospice, you'll hear this, and I firmly believe it's true that the hearing is the last thing to go. And I think people are present even when they seem not to be. So that I know it's hard. You're in this caregiving role. It's hard to go from that, if not impossible, to just being family. you know, and that's something the hospice tries to help people with. But if you're there, you know, is trying to go into the present, to know that whatever happens is going to happen. You know, we can't control it.
Yeah.
But we can be, and you can be with that loved one, and you can hold their hand, or you can talk to them, or you can be together, to be present.
And they will feel it.
And they will.
And I think they hold on, and they know, and they feel. And as a funeral director, we try to relieve the stress and know that our main goal is not to take you away from your family member. We will be glad to help over the phone and through email to alleviate any of the stress that families have. I have a lot of families calling during Christmas saying, I don't know, you know, she's not doing well. It could happen before Christmas, during Christmas. We're just nervous because family's here and they're leaving. We just don't want to take you away from your family to stress out about coming into the funeral home and make plans and, God forbid, have something happen to your family member while you're with us. So don't hesitate to call your funeral director to get options or any concerns out of the way. But we want you to keep your main concern on being present and there with your family and your loved one and making those feelings known and said and shared with your family. So always feel free to reach out, and I want to make a quick announcement that, inspired by a common mission, Home Care and Hospice of New England, the parent company of Home and Hospice Care of Rhode Island, and Visiting Nurse Home Care will be affiliating with Hyannis, Massachusetts-based Hope Health. This merger will create the largest nonprofit hospice and palliative care provider in New England, allowing the organization to grow to meet the needs of the people they serve in a much larger area. The headquarters will be in Providence, Rhode Island, and this means that their services will now expand to between Providence and the Cape, which includes all of us wonderful people in southeastern Massachusetts.
That's right.
So I'm very glad to hear this news. I'm going to post everything that we've talked about and more for my listeners on thesilvalining.org. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful holiday season. All of our love from the Silva Farrier Funeral Home family is with you all. And thank you again.